Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com.
Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. Now, picture this. If you've chanced across this podcast and you were looking for a sign about whether or not you should listen, imagine in your head a circle with an arrow pointing to the right. That arrow and that circle together mean go this way in something called Hobo Code. We'll make sense of this all later, I hope. Hi, my name's Ben.
Hi, my name's Noel Squeaky Chair Brown. That's my hobo name. And I also have a squeaky chair. I've been listening back to the episodes occasionally and noticing the dulcet tones of my squeaky chair. I think it's time for a replacement there. But yeah, it's true, Ben. A hobo code is something we've delved into in the past, in our other life as conspiracy realists on stuff they don't want you to know. In fact, the very first live tour we ever did was a live episode on that very subject. It was sort of a grab bag episode, but hobo code was one of them. And in fact, I promised myself and my daughter that I was going to get a tattoo of this one hobo code that's like a eye with like some kind of lines around it, like almost like an A-frame, and it means safe harbor. I never did that thing, and my daughter won't stop ragging me about it. But it's true, Ben. Hobo code. It's a thing. It is a secret language, which is why we covered it in Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. But today, we're talking about the man, the myth, the legend, the Hobo King himself.
Super producer Casey Pegram.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, no. You're talking about Leon Ray Livingston.
I am. Casey Pegram is his own kind of hobo king. But the original hobo king, maybe not the original, but the self-proclaimed hobo king, a.k.a. A number one, born in 1872, died in 1944, was what you'd call a bit of a rambling man. I know you hear about that in songs a lot. I was born a rambling man and all that. The idea of making a living, doing the best you can, going from place to place. This is necessarily being homeless or being in any way some kind of derelict or some kind of, you know, no good Nick. The image of the hobo back in those early days was almost one of reverence. It was this idea of someone who kind of made their own way in the world and was able to just go where they wanted to and do what they wanted to and live this really freewheeling kind of lifestyle. And you think about the image of the hobo from cartoons and books and things like, you know, The Grapes of Wrath. A lot of this revolved around migrant labor, work that would be seasonal perhaps, or work that would be, you know, a particular project like building a bridge or, harvesting a crop, and then you move on to the next job. Livingston, however, didn't really fit that image of the merry tramp with his bindle and his, you know, his toe sticking out of his shoe, roasting his can of beans over the open fire. He was actually a pretty well-dressed man. He owned a fancy suit and kind of passed for a middle-class, possibly even upper-class gent.
Right. Let's bust some myths, or I would like to at least bust some myths about the word hobo. So if you hear the word hobo nowadays in the West, you're going to associate it with the stick and bindle, with maybe a lovable tramp hat, something like the chimney sweep in Mary Poppins, plus a freight train rider. However, the word hobo, or the concept of hobery, I don't know, I'm churchifying words here. The concept there comes from the idea of migrant workers who had to travel like vagabonds from one work site to the next. There is there's a discrepancy in some of the research here, because you'll hear the idea, the life of a migrant worker somehow romanticized. This was very much not the case. The rise of the hobo is a very old story. So in post-Civil War America, hobos were seen as somehow a bit of metonymy for the U.S. at large. They were seen as avatars of this rugged identity, this pioneer lifestyle, everything west of the Mississippi, right? You light out for the territories, as Mark Twain said. You're taking on odd jobs. You're chasing that dream somewhere on the horizon. But during the Great Depression, many people who would not just hop on a train and work odd jobs for fun were forced to, because the economy crashed. And so the idea of being a hobo was, at that time, the romantic ideal was replaced by a clear picture of a nation in crisis. And we're getting some of this from a great Mental Floss article that has a contemporaneous quote about the hobo lifestyle. It says, "The hobo lifestyle is one that requires skill, adaptability, and both a sense of place and lack of identification with a specific home. It's not a lifestyle everyone can follow." But Noel, maybe we can explore a little bit more about the relationship between the railroads, the Civil War, and what we call hobos.
Absolutely. They really are kind of two sides of the same coin. Don't know if that fully applies here, but I'm working with what I got. It's a little earlier than we usually record. It's true, because as the railroads continued to kind of spread throughout the country, 45,000 miles before 1871 to around 200,000 miles by 1900, it became pretty easy for folks to, you know, hitch a ride. Something we see today. Ben, you always talk about your fascination with the train hopping lifestyle and like train kid songs. And, you know, you're here in Atlanta, in Little Five Points, that's a place where a lot of these folks kind of gather and hang out. And that's a lifestyle choice largely as well. We have to remember that these individuals weren't necessarily destitute. They were deciding, okay, I'm not going to have a stable home situation in favor of this kind of freewheeling, you know, by the seat of our pants kind of lifestyle. So it very much was something that people were doing very consciously for the most part. And so it's really interesting too. I was trying to look up like hobo. Seems like a portmanteau of some sort, like a combination of two sounds that are from two different words. But it's not really, nothing that I can find indicates that. It's just sort of a word that came around to describe this type of person. And there is a female equivalent called a beauette, which seems a little diminutive and kind of sexist, sort of like a mini hobo. But yeah, that's what the Internet Dictionary of Hobo Slang has to say about it. But this is something that really began to kind of take hold in popular culture in the 19th and early 20th centuries, because this really was kind of, you know, people who considered themselves kind of workaday, you know, Joes and Janes. There was something to kind of envy in this lifestyle, the ability to not be tied down and to be able to go where you wanted to. And folks like Jack London and W.H. Davies were actually, you know, followed along with a lot of these types and wrote books kind of, you know, romanticizing this whole lifestyle. And even the character of Charlie Chaplin, his most famous character, the Little Tramp, which was just that, a little tramp wearing that kind of hobo garb, that became his absolutely most popular and recognizable character, probably one of the most recognizable characters in all of cinema in the 20th century.
There are three people who could pull off that mustache.
Uh-huh.
There's Michael Jordan. There's Charlie Chaplin, and then, of course, there's Hitler, who shows up inevitably in any history show.
It's true.
I would say out of the three, Charlie Chaplin is the best person to wear what's called a toothbrush mustache. His best film, by the way, is The Great Dictator. I recommend people watch his very rare speaking role. It's a fantastic monologue.
It's almost like a precursor to Mel Brooks, you know, in its satire. Like, it's really, really great. I will add one more name to the toothbrush mustache pull-off club. That's a weird-sounding thing. The keyboard player for the band Sparks, if you are not familiar, he has rocked that mustache since the 70s, probably despite multiple stylists telling him he maybe ought to go in a different direction.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
If we've learned anything in the process of doing this podcast, just living life, it's that there's always a catch.
So when we heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month, if you get a 3-month plan, we looked at each other and we thought, nah, what's the catch?
But here's the thing. In this case, there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online.
Yeah, they cut out that middleman cost of retail stores, and they pass those sweet, sweet savings directly to you. We're not joking. We have tried out Mint Mobile ourselves, and it's super convenient, and it actually, like, we tried to find a catch, and there's not one.
So, to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan.
Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on the incredible true story, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare reveals the gripping tale of the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Get tickets now for this action comedy masterpiece that defies expectations, showcasing how one daring mission reshaped history and set the stage for modern Black Ops warfare using unconventional and utterly ungentlemanly techniques.
Starring Henry Cavill, known for his iconic portrayal of Superman, and Alan Ritchson, star of Reacher. Get ready for a mission with a little madness and a lot of mayhem.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R, and in theaters April 19th, get tickets now.
I want to be very clear about The Great Dictator by Charlie Chaplin. Now, as any fans of Charlie Chaplin know, he was, you know, the tramp character, and often he was doing silent film. However, in these times especially, I recommend everybody check out the final speech from The Great Dictator. I would say it is prescient. I would say it's well-written, and it should frighten you. This is a tangent, and let me not get too political here. But as you said, Noel, Charlie Chaplin dubbed himself the Little Tramp. He never dubbed himself King of the Hobos, and that's something that Leon Ray Livingston actually did. We have to be careful with the phrase Hobo King, again, not to be confused with Hoboken, New Jersey, because Leon Ray Livingston was not, he didn't have a coronation. He was not set, like the other itinerant workers in the population did not say, Leon Ray Livingston in his $40 suit, he's our emperor. No. It turns out that Livingston dubbed himself King of the Hobos.
Mr. Livingston, I presume? No? That's a different Livingston, I presume. Yeah, he was born to a pretty well-off family in San Francisco on the 24th of August in the year of somebody's Lord, 1872. His dad was French, his mom was German, and he claims that he was able to speak both German and French fluently at a very early age by grade school, and that he also learned Spanish. So he was a very worldly gent, we know most of what we know about Livingston from this book that he wrote, which is actually in the public domain. I listened to a little bit of an audiobook version of it for this episode. You can find it on YouTube. It's like 6 hours long. You can hear the whole thing. And this book in particular, I think he wrote a few, is called The Tale of the Tramp by Leon Ray Livingston. And there's a couple of different parts. It's not 6 hours, it's 4 hours. But you can find that all in one part on YouTube for free right now. I highly recommend giving that a listen.
Yeah, it's interesting because just like his self-coronation, self-proclamation, all of what we know of Livingston, or probably the majority of it, is based on the books that he wrote. So he's at best a biased source, and he's got some braggadocio. He's sort of building his own mythology, which is a very American and very cool thing to do. I'm sticking up for him a little bit because, like Casey, like Noel, and like yours truly, Livingston has an August birthday. It's weird, Noel, because he says he was born in San Francisco, and he actually was not born into penury. He was born well-to-do, and at age 11, acting out, raging against the machine, pulling his whole Pink Floyd, The Wall kind of scenario, led him to a life on the road. The story goes that the day after his 11th birthday, so the 25th of August, his teacher sent him home with a note, said, this kid is behaving poorly, and your father, young Livingston, has to sign this note. You have to return it to me. So 11-year-old Leon Ray Livingston, one, did not show his father that note. And then, according to his book, this was in A Philosophy of Tramping, he spotted his teacher heading toward his house the next morning. He snuck out of the house, and then he just kept going. That's his origin story.
That is an extreme reaction to a bad note home from school, yeah. I have to say. I remember running away from home. I'm doing quote fingers here when I was a kid. I made it as far as putt-putt golf, which was maybe a mile from the house, and just was like playing video games and realized like, oh, I'm out of money now. I should probably just go back home. But our boy Livingston went the full mile. The figurative mile. I went a full mile and then a full mile back home. But yeah, it's true. Quick question, Ben. Side note: did you ever get a bad note home from teacher or like something along those lines, and you tried to bury it? You tried to like, you know, keep it from your parents with the misguided notion that they weren't just gonna like call.
I'm a revolutionary at heart, so any behavioral disagreements I had with an authority figure, I 100% doubled down on and was fairly assertive about voicing with my parents. So I see no use in hiding that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's a very terrifying situation for a lot of us when we're young, right? Here in the U.S., a lot of kids are graded on a 1 to 100 scale for objective measures of success. But especially in early grades, a lot of kids were graded on, let me ask you guys this. Did you ever get the satisfactory, not satisfactory ratings for behavior as a child? Casey's smirking. You get it.
Yeah, we had like S, S plus, U. It was like a thing hanging up on the wall. This is like first grade or maybe even kindergarten. And like it was kind of like soccer rules. Like if you one violation, they like pulled the first card out. And like as you go, like you would get down to that U card, which would be kind of like the yellow card or the red card, whatever. And that would be it. Like you would be dreading the rest of the day because you know you were gonna go home with it. And there would be a price to pay.
Casey on the case. And our boy Livingston definitely paid that price. So he was a U, probably a U plus or U minus, whatever you want to, whichever direction you want to go with that, which means the worst. And he decided he'd had it with school. So he packed up a 22 caliber rifle and a little bit of cash. Well, he could stuff in his pockets, some that he had stolen from his mom. For shame, and some that he'd gotten as a birthday present from an uncle. He boarded a steamboat in San Francisco Harbor and made it to Sacramento, where he apparently booked the most expensive hotel in the city. He was unaware of this. So he burned through that cash that he had very, very quickly during this 4-night stay. He had like $20, I think. And then there's an interesting little tidbit of currency exchange here, Ben, that I was a little confused about when I first read, but you kind of set me straight.
Well, it's okay. I'm going to be honest. I think the guy is at best embellishing. At worst, lying. Maybe he's got a bit of Barnum to him, and fans of the circus, you'll understand the reference there. So he says he stayed at the most expensive hotel in Sacramento, and it cost him $20 for 4 nights. That's a lot of money back then. But then he talks about how he left a 100 franc note with a bank cashier, and He essentially ran out of the bank because the teller, we can only presume, said, "Hey, you're 11. What are you doing with 100 franc?" And the weird thing about this is that, I don't know, it doesn't match up. Far be it for me to be a hater, but at this time, it's safe to say most 11-year-olds did not have 20 U.S. dollars, much less 100 French dollars or equivalent thereof. And so he says that he still had his rifle and he still had a couple bucks, US dollars, we assume. And because he had lost 100 franc with the bank cashier, he was at his wit's end, at his young wit's end. So he walked to a spot along a railway, a spot where the train would stop for water. And at the train, he gave his rifle to an employee of the train, a brakeman specifically,
in exchange for the ability to stow away on a ride to Truckee. Truckee, T-R-U-C-K-E-E. That's not a big metropolis, is it?
Yeah, I don't know. Do you think it's still around? It kind of makes me think of places like Barstow or like Modesto, not to malign any of these places, but there's sort of a little more, you think of California in terms of its metro areas, in terms of like, you know, a lot of affluence and hustle and bustle, but there's a ton of very small, kind of more dusty, kind of one-horse towns all over California. Listeners from California, though, let us know. Have you been to Truckee? We did look it up. It does still exist. It looks kind of charming, actually. Sort of like a little old-timey downtown area. Probably hasn't changed much since the time of this story.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On-demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on the incredible true story, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare reveals the gripping tale of the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Get tickets now for this action comedy masterpiece that defies expectations, showcasing how one daring mission reshaped history and set the stage for modern black ops warfare using unconventional and utterly ungentlemanly techniques.
Starring Henry Cavill, known for his iconic portrayal of Superman, and Alan Ritchson, star of Reacher. Get ready for a mission with a little madness and a lot of mayhem.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R, and in theaters April 19th, get tickets now. Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh boy, have I ever, Ben.
This is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com.
But he actually didn't make it to Truckee. He got put off by a brakeman, I guess, which is the guy that like breaks the train in Winnemucca. Gosh, we're going to get emails about this one. I'm going to go with Winnemucca, Nevada. That's in the desert. So he got put again. You're right, Ben. We got to keep taking grains of salt with this stuff because like the whole idea of, and then I was ejected from the train in the middle of the desert and I had to fend with nothing but my pocket knife and I traded my rifle and I had to, you know, wrestle giant scorpions with my bare hands. That's not in here, but you know, well, let's just double down on dude's fantabulism. So around 450 miles from San Francisco is where he was let out here. So he decided that he wanted to kind of hone his survival chops even further. So, you know, he didn't have the best luck in this first run. He realized he was, you know, he was caught and he needed to do a better job of hiding himself and kind of learning some of the rules of the road or the rails, as it were. But he liked it. He got a taste for it and he decided that this was the life for him. He was going to start in earnest a career, I guess, as a hobo. And that's when he really just went ham on hopping the rails and riding all over creation, taking these itinerant jobs that we talked about, crossing the country right as the Industrial Revolution was really taking hold. Again, a lot of his braggadocio would come out in his writings, and he did boast that he traveled 500,000 miles on trains while only spending a little over $7 on fares. 500,000. I don't know about that. Come on. That's wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. His experience was not the average experience, you know, of many itinerant workers, many migrants. But you're right, Noel, he spent decades on the road. That part is true. He also took to writing about his writing fanciful stories about his time on the road. And he eventually published about Baker's dozen books concerning his travels. The most thorough one, I guess, the compendium, is a book called Life and Adventures of A Number One, America's Most Celebrated Tramp. This was published in 1910. At that point, he had been on the road for almost 30 years, and it includes a lot of early tales of his hobo origin. And if this were an album, one of the breakout tracks of Life and Adventures of A Number One is this story about him working on a British trade ship that left New Orleans for Belize. And the idea here is that he took the job, but then he eventually jumped ship and began working at a mahogany camp, meaning a camp that was set up to harvest mahogany wood. Also, going back to what we said in the beginning of this episode, A Number One is his hobo name, and it plays a big part in our ability to prove that at least some of his travels, in fact, many of his travels, actually happened. So the guy is not just sitting at home in San Francisco writing some sort of fan fiction about an alternate version of himself. He really is on the road, and some of his details actually make sense, even if they are fabulous, as you said, even if they are a bit embellished. But Belize, Central America, that's pretty crazy, right? To get to there in the late 1800s, early 1900s?
A man after your own heart, Ben. I mean, you had some kind of tramp-like days in Central America yourself, or South America. You tell some great stories about those years in your life that I don't know, it seems like you got a kindred spirit here in Mr. Livingston.
No comment.
No comment. Okay. Fair enough. And this period in Livingston's life really made for some fantastic tales. His time in the British mahogany camp, he even, you know, was able to kind of report on some of the conditions in these camps, which, as we can imagine, you know, if you know anything about this time in the history of labor, not good, not a lot of oversight. And he was able to kind of report on some of that. He apparently multiple times attempted to desert his employers and kind of extort them for the money that would get him home. Talked about things like eating roasted baboon and over-dramatized version of malaria that he referred to as the Black Swamp Fever.
never heard that used anywhere outside of this gentleman's writing. And, you know, again, it was all this kind of really, you know, cartoony, romanticized, really flowery writing, very self-aggrandizing. Who knew that a guy that dubbed himself the Hobo King and a number one would potentially have an overinflated sense of self? But it makes for some really entertaining writing. And this is some of the stuff he wrote about some of the really tragic socioeconomic conditions of life in this mahogany camp, making references to the food that he was forced to eat as well. Quote, "I became acquainted with roasted baboons, fried parrots, turtle and armadillo stews, tapir steak, tapir, T-A-P-I-R? I don't know that.
Tapir.
Animal. Tapir, cool. Should have just quit while I was ahead. Iguana, an enormous and ugly tree lizard," he says, "monkey soup, etc." And he describes one particularly, let's say, treacherous journey that he took upriver. He says, "We embarked in dugouts, canoes, right? Men, women, children, dogs, household effects, provisions, etc." He's fond of this, etc. "And paddled up the Rio Hondo. After several hours passing through mangrove swamps, we came to higher ground, and then we only could use poles as the river became crooked, shallow, and full of rapids. Alligators and enormous turtles slid from the banks as we approached them, and at night when we camped on the riverbank around the fires, we could hear the cries of panthers, mountain lions, wildcats, monkeys, and coyotes in the dark jungle." Good stuff.
So the problem with that passage, I think what you read starts with "we embarked in dugouts" and ends at "coyotes in the dark jungle." So that whole thing is one quote. The problem with that quote is that it, I'm not going to say plagiarizes, but it echoes an earlier account made by a guy named Trader Horn about a river trip in Gabon, in the Agoi River, or on the Agoi River.
Interesting.
So we don't know how true it is. We know that he went to Belize, probably, but we don't know if he actually ate monkey soup or if he's quoting another book that he read. According to the story, while he's in this mahogany camp, he gets his first letter from home, which means that he is still somehow in contact with his family and his kinfolk, as they say in the South, in San Francisco. And his parents are giving him the equivalent of a 5-star rating. Or Casey, to your point, they're giving him an S+ for his disappearances. They say, "We are so delighted to hear from you. We thought you were dead, but you're super cool. Good job, kiddo." And then according to his story, he writes back to them and he says, "Yeah, I'm having adventures. I ate monkey soup. I've been sailing around Central America and rivers and the ocean and such. Also, I need a little bit of scratch to make my way home, even though I'm having the time of my life." And he writes these incredibly evocative descriptions. He details his day-to-day life to his parents, where he says, "I'm eating all kinds of new fruit. Have you heard of guava? What about breadfruit, etc.? Look at these butterflies I saw. The birds are awesome. People have treated me like the best. It's amazing here. All my coworkers are cool. And I made myself popular by making everybody else fat." That's basically what he says. "And I also gave people a deal at the company store. And so now I've got all these souvenirs. Mom, Dad," says A number one, "I'm having an amazing time. Also give me money so I can go home." You see the discrepancy there? You see how the story doesn't quite add up if you're having that much of a good time?
I 100,000,000% do. And I got to say, I can't even fault him for it, because this stuff really is pretty fun to read. And I could see this absolutely catching the American kind of zeitgeist by storm. And there's so much more left to tell about this guy, Ben, to the point where we didn't really know this going in. You know how we roll. But we have decided to cut this into a two-parter. And we teased some stuff at the top of the show about hobo code and about, you know, the stuff that we had researched into that with stuff they don't want you to know. And we're going to kind of leave you without following through on that, but we promise that we will in the next episode, and I think you're going to really enjoy it. In the meantime, huge thanks to super producer Casey Pegram, Alex Williams, who composed our theme, Christopher Hasiotis, here in spirit.
Yes, that's right. This is the first part of a two-part series. We are leaving Livingston in Belize, which I'm going to start using as a catchphrase for different things. So, leaving Livingston in Belize, learn more about his further adventures, learn why he is called A Number One, and learn how he coronated himself as the quote-unquote hobo king. Big thanks, as always, to our main man, our magnetic north of research, Gabe Luzier, who still refuses to tell us how to pronounce his last name.
I respect that.
And big, big thanks to Eves Jeffcoat, our peer podcaster. Big thanks to the trains, which are imperfect, but play a huge role in the development of these United States.
They mainly run on time. Who else? Anybody else? Thanks to Jonathan Strickland. Where's that guy? I hope he's okay. He seemed so lonely last time. We got you, Jonathan. We will. We did change up the Zoom code, but we will send you those new digits very soon, and hope for you to Zoom bomb us in the very near future. I look forward to it, honestly, because frankly, I'm feeling a little isolated too. We're back to lockdown here in Atlanta, so a little bit of healthy, mischievous ribbing from the old Quister himself would probably do us all good. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off. Starts Friday and open Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.